This is Music Respond. I'm Kate Remington with Neva Fakrara, and I am just so much looking forward to talking with you about your part of the soundtrack for Detroit Become Human. It's great to have a chance to talk.
Great to be on the show. Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You wrote the music for the android Connor, and he's been programmed to hunt down the deviant androids who have been acting strangely, not behaving the way they've been programmed to do, like Marcus and Kara. Those are two other characters that you can play in the game. And I think Connor is such an interesting character because he, to me anyway, seems the most androidy of all of them. Because he doesn't really, if you play him a certain way, you don't get the emotions or the emotional attachments that you could get with Kara or with Marcus. So I'm wondering how the team at Quantic Dream, how did they approach you with this?
Well, strangely enough, I knew about this project a long time ago when it was announced at E3, and I think that was like 2015 or something like that. So I knew about the project, and all of a sudden one day I woke up and there was a email sitting in my contact page on my website inquiring about my interest on a Quantic Dream project. And me being very much of a skeptic, I was like, oh, this is a Russian spam or something like that. So I just basically responded. I was like, sure, let's just go with it and see what happens. And then once they sent me the NDA, I was like, oh, this is actually happening. So they basically inquired about my availabilities and everything. And they had listened to some of my scores before. And they knew that I built custom instruments and everything like that. So they just wanted me to kind of more or less be a human creating an android music. And that's basically what they wanted me to do.
Wow, that must have been a really interesting challenge, because unlike the other two characters that do develop really human emotions, Connor is different. He's just a machine, basically.
And that was the challenge. That was the biggest challenge. I mean, when I spoke with David and kind of just the conversations that we had, was that was the biggest challenge of, because the other two characters are a lot more deviant, if you will, than Connor is. And Connor is just this singular mission in hand, and he just has to do something and he just has to get it done. There are some challenging moments that we cross that path of the emotional sense of what a robot should feel like and what it should sound like. And that those were the hardest parts to actually write as far as musically is concerned.
There's one just really amazing line that he says. He's been assigned to work with a detective in the Detroit police force, Hank. And Connor's, you know, trying to find a way in, trying to get Hank to at least warm up to him a little bit. And Connor asks him about music and heavy metal music. And then when Hank says, oh, do you listen to that? Connor says, well, no, but he knows about music. And it's just a great illustration, I think, of how artificial Connor is.
Well, that's it's funny you say that. That was basically what I kind of approached it as well. Approach to music. One of the things that I usually like doing is I like creating rules for any project that I'm on. And the rule for Detroit and Connor specifically was that how would an android create music? And how would it, what would it utilize? What would it think about? And how would it become its own music? How would it actually create its own thematic ideas or whatever it is? And it's funny you bring that up. And that's basically how I approached the entire project. I was like, it's supposed to be mathematical. It's supposed to be really complex. And sometimes it doesn't make sense, but it's what Connor is.
It's really fascinating. And the theme that you created for him is perfect because it's very simple. It almost sounds like it could be the pulsing of like computer code almost.
I really appreciate that. Thanks. It was just a very simple bass line on a really old vintage Moog synthesizer. So it was that's basically how I got the sound. And that was literally the first thing that I ever wrote for the project. And it just kind of, everybody resonated with it really well, and it just, we kept it.
I wanted to ask you about that synthesizer because I'm just curious about what sort of sound or quality those classic old synthesizers have that modern ones don't.
Well, it's the unpredictability that they have. Most of those analog synthesizers, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to collect some, and I've had them for a while, and it was like they were not eating dust, but they were sitting in dust for a while before I was able to kind of bring him back in, because it's a lot easier to do a lot of these sounds on a computer, but I wanted that really kind of analog synthesizer sound to capture the inside of a robot, if you will. And these analog synthesizers have these amazing warmth, but they're slightly out of tunes at points, and they just give you this beautiful character, and you just don't need to do too much to them. I mean, most of the Connor stuff was done with synthesizers or analog synthesizer, modular synthesizers, lots of weird instruments that were just are not typically used, and there was a lot of experimenting to be done with it. So that's how it became.
Yeah, it's so cool, and I love in the video you talk about how you use electric string instruments, violin and viola, without any amps. And so they have this really amazing, dry, just non-resonating sound.
Sure.
And how much experimentation did you do to kind of hit on that?
Well, the experimenting actually came about with the idea of, I have an amazing collaborative actually at the studio. His name is Naveed Hijazi, who plays all my strings here at basically any sort of violin, any sort of viola, or any sort of string things that you could ever think of. He actually plays it for me here at the studio. So the conversation kind of started, I knew I didn't want to record any organic instruments. I knew I didn't want it to feel human. So one of the things that I was just basically playing around with, one day he wasn't here at the studio and I just went into his room and I grabbed one of his instruments and I just started kind of plucking it around, and I realized there is no resonation into these instruments. So the first experiment was with him and trying to kind of see what we could do with it. And it came out, and it basically was just like, we're like, let's just not put anything on this, and let's just put a microphone on it and see how it's going to sound. And it was a really funny conversation when I had it with Quantic Dream, and I told him, I was like, I don't want to record an orchestra. So it was a very interesting conversation that I had, and they were like, just go do whatever you want to do, because I just, as long as it's going to sound authentic to who Connor is, it's going to sound okay. And that's, I was pleasantly surprised with how we kind of got that experiment done, and it was awesome.
That is incredible, because it doesn't often happen with composers. Normally, the audio director or the music supervisor's kind of micromanaging things. And so it's really fantastic that they gave you that amount of freedom.
Yeah, it was absolute. I mean, it was an absolute pleasure to be able to kind of do what kind of, I guess it was more that they knew that I was going to stay true to Connor and who he was and who he is. And it was basically just, they allowed me to experiment as much as I want, knowing how I wanted it to do it. So, I mean, just when I told them I'm building a 20-foot guitar, they didn't tell me I was crazy. They were just like, just go do it and see what it sounds like. So,
yeah, let's talk about that 20-foot guitar, because that's not something most people would, you know, wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to build a 20-foot guitar.
well, I just a little bit of background. I grew up basically playing Persian classical music. My first instrument was a dulcimer or a santur. That's what we call it in the Persian classical world of music. And one of the things is that there's no bass notes in the Persian classical world. We bring in Arabic instruments in order for us to be able to do that. It's called the oud or the barbat that we actually use. So when I first started studying this Persian classical thing at a very young age, I was always a rebel and I wanted to kind of do something different. So I started modifying my instruments in order for me to be able to do that. So once I moved to LA, one of the things that basically I found was that an amazing gentleman named John Schneider, who studied with another really awesome man named Harry Partch. Harry Partch, his idea was that on a 12-note scale, there's notes between these notes, and he wanted to be able to capture all of those sounds with a specific instrument. So he started building his own instruments. So I was fortunate enough to study with John, who was working with Harry a long time ago, and he was an awesome man. And that's how I started building my instruments. And for every project, I like to build a custom instrument for it in order for me to capture what I wanted to do and physically be able to play it. And the 20-foot guitar was one of those ideas that I just wanted to kind of just basically build something that I could physically play, just kind of like when a human builds a machine. I wanted to build a machine that I could physically touch and feel and actually manipulate.
And it has such an amazing sound. I guess maybe calling it a guitar doesn't give people the best picture, because it's actually pipes, like a frame of yeah. pipes with these long, long strings. And so it has this incredible, really kind of visceral low tone. I mean, you sort of feel yeah. it in your chest, I think. It must be amazing to be able to play it.
It's funny enough when you say that, it's when we first, I actually have a welder that I work with, and when I told him the idea and he built it and we brought it back to the studio, the first thing I did, I was like, oh, let me just start playing it. And to my surprise, there was no sound at all from it. And I was like, this was a fun experiment. And then I basically went back to the kind of the idea that went to the drawing board. And the reason I built the instrument was to get those feeling in your chest. And what I did was I realized, oh, this has to be subharmonics. So I connected contact mics to the piping that are hollow and captured the sound through the actual instrument versus it being captured from the air. So it's amplified that way in order for it to be even heard. So it was a very fun experience. And again, it's like you say, it's hard to call it a guitar, but when I tell someone that I'm building this apparatus, it's easier to pitch it as a guitar or someone that actually knows something similar about it. It's my rabbit hole that I like to go down on and see what's down there, if you will.
That's so cool. So how did you actually hear it then? Did you have to wear headphones while you were playing it so that you knew what the sound was?
No, so I connected, it's connected to a guitar amplifier. So basically just these contact mics are just kind of plugged into this guitar amp that just amplifies the low bass and just kind of colors it a little bit in order for us to even be able to hear it. So you could hear it inside the room, but without the contact mics, it barely has any noise at all.
It's absolutely fascinating. And the way you blend it with the cues is just very, very cool.
Thank you very much.
How influential was seeing the actor Brian Deckard, who played Connor? That must have been a great for getting ideas.
This is awesome you say that. I actually had dinner with him last night for the first time. And it was a very surreal feeling. He was Connor. He's literally who Connor is with every single aspect of it. He is extremely analytical, just as a human being. He's extremely analytical. He's just Connor. And it was extremely surreal to be able to sit in front of him. He captures that character to the T, and it's really weird. It's just really, really weird.
the mocap just all the way through the game is so incredible. And even the actors who play Kara and Marcus, it's really them. And you sort of forget that they're not real and they're not androids. And so that's very cool. I was going to ask you if you've played the game since it came out and what that experience was like, but it sounds like it was a little weirder to have
Connor. it's weirder to sit in front of Connor, actually. That's the weird part. But no, I have actually played the video game many, many times, even during the process that we were writing. I had a chance. I was able to kind of play it and demo it. And I've played it many, many times. I've figured out how to do all of this stuff. And yeah, it's an awesome story to be able to, even as a fan, I'm a big fan of it. Even if I wasn't working on it, this would have been a video game that I would have purchased and actually played myself. So,
well, what's so fascinating about it, and there aren't too many games that do this, but the choices that you make as you're playing one of the characters really change the story. In some cases, just turn it around 180 degrees. And so how were you able to cover all of those twists and turns? I'm sure you must have worked really closely with David Cage, who is the writer and the director. But were they asking you to write music for all of those eventualities?
Technically, yes and no. It was more or less kind of capturing feelings and capturing moments and different, capturing different adjectives. And that's what it was more about. Once I figured out what Connor's world is musically, than it was, okay, let's create something that is a little bit more deviant, like deviant level one, deviant level two, deviant level three, and then figure out the different paths that Connor is going to take. I mean, it was a very different way of scoring a video game, as they wanted it to feel like a movie and not just a video game. And one of the things that I was doing is I was actually scoring to picture, and to exact scenes and basically different moments. And so it became a little bit of a different experience of not doing a typical video game score, but more or less just telling a story alongside the different characters.
That is so cool. And the story is just, it just blew me away. And there's a very tense situation right off the bat where Connor has to negotiate with a deviant who's got a little girl hostage, and they're on the ledge of a roof. And, you know, you have to decide what Connor will do. And that cue, your choice, just like keeps escalating that tension. It's really incredible.
Thanks. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
quieter moments where Connor is, he's got this ability to go into a space where there's been an encounter with a deviant or something's gone on, and he can analyze it. And you might think, well, that's kind of dull. I mean, he's just like processing things. But your cues for those, the cue for analyzing, it has all these layers. And so it never gets old. It's just very, very cool.
Well, I mean, that's the idea of how would an Android actually make music? And that was, it's basically kind of like a mathematical formula. And that's how I treated it. I was like, how complex can I make it? How many layers can I put as long? I mean, there's this theory or a school of thought that a human ear can only hear three things at a time, and no more than that. But I kind of even went further, and I was like, well, I don't care what a human ear can hear. I care more of this idea of what an Android can actually do and what that could be the capabilities of. So I just basically stacked up a lot of different layers and played it a little bit mathematical and like, okay, here comes this other layer. And if this layer is not here, what happens to this layer down over there? And it was a fun little mess that happened throughout the whole thing.
Speaking of layers, there is a really thrilling, just sort of heart-in-your-mouth chase scene where Connor's going after a deviant and he runs all over the place, lots of running through like greenhouses and has to dodge and running through a cornfield and stuff. And your cue for that, just the way it builds and builds and builds, is thrilling. I mean, I was like out of breath listening to it.
It's funny you say that. I actually have... A lot of Twitter followers that actually come back and say that, I drive to this music, and I freak out about that. And I'm like, I didn't write this to be a driving piece of music because I know how it feels to drive with that piece. I've done it myself. And it just escalates, and you're like, don't do it. And I tell them, I'm like, I'm not responsible for anything if you guys are driving to it. It's just really, really, really funny. But that's one of the pieces that, I give this props to Mary Lockwood, the music supervisor, who just basically challenged me on it. And she was like, just go on wild and crazy. As wild as you can get, just give me something that's fun and just basically kind of keeps you on the edge of your seat at all times.
It's really incredible. And the percussion is amazing, the way it
Thank
comes
you.
In. Your studio, the shots that I've seen, it just looks like this incredible musical playground with all of these instruments that are around all the time. So it must have been fun to have all of these things just at your disposal that you could just keep adding in.
Well, it's, I've built this studio in a sense of it kind of it being my workspace, just kind of, or a kind of just a, I don't know how to explain it. It's just kind of different tools that I have around me. I go back to this, I tell my wife this as well. It's like, and I tell everyone, if I wasn't a musician, I would actually be in woodworking and I would be doing something like that as with my hand, because I love doing woodworking. So for me, all of these are tools in order for me to craft whatever I want to craft. So, and it's, I've been fortunate enough to be able to just kind of work with amazing people that allow me to do that. I pinch myself every single day that I get to do what I love doing, and I get to be a kid every single day. I get to come in and I'm just like, oh, let's just create something new and fresh, and let me just see how crazy I can get. And I've been fortunate to be able to have amazing creative teams to be able to just allow me to do it. And the amazing musicians that I'm able to kind of have alongside me, that I could just tell them to go do whatever I want them to do, and they trust me in order for them to do that. I mean, Naveed Hijazi, who basically played most of the strings that are on Detroit, they are really, really difficult pieces to play, because again, I try to make it that what an android would do. And he knocked it out of the park. And it's just, if you listen closely to some of these strings lines, they're extremely difficult to play. And that's just comes back to the idea of just that there's all of these tools are available. I just had to make sure that I do use the right tools in it. And that's how the studio is completely designed that way.
It's beautiful to look at. And again, it must be an amazing space for them to work in. And you've mentioned Naveed, and it must have been so strange for him, because it's normal for a musician to play with feeling and vibrato and bring a lot of emotion to the music. So it must have been an interesting experience for him to play like a robot, I guess.
Well, he's classically trained. Strangely enough, he's extreme. He went to Spain Conservatory somewhere in Madrid, and he went to Berklee College of Music. So he's extremely classically trained. And when I've known him for, I don't know, almost 10 years now. And every time I work with him, I get something brand new from him. And he allows me to kind of just more or less be a puppeteer to him. And it becomes really fascinating that when you challenge a musician that is willing to be challenged, you get some really awesome ideas and awesome things to do. I mean, even the electric string quartet group that I work with, it was for me to tell them, oh, we're going to be doing an electric string quartet, but don't bring an amp, don't bring a real instrument, just bring whatever you guys want to play on, and make sure you have a couple of bows with you, because we might be breaking them. So when I'm able to kind of talk to these musicians in that sense of, and having a relationship with them in order for them to trust me to be able to push them to the boundaries, it's really great to be able to do that. And I'm ecstatic about that.
Oh yeah, because then you get this synergy going. And when you were recording them, were there any surprises or anything that you had thought out in your head that you thought was going to work, and then they came up with a different idea of doing it?
There's always there's always surprises in every corner when I do things. It's mostly bad surprises. It's mostly like, oh, that's not gonna work. And it's just because I just push everything to the boundaries. Like when we were recording something, I wanted them to do something really, really super quiet. And then we realized on electric instrument, it's not gonna sound quiet. It's just not gonna sound like anything. So especially if you're in a big room, unless you're recording them in a completely separate ways, you're not going to capture it. So it's always from my experience, it's always my crazy ideas that never work. But then sometimes I get the surprises and I'm like, cool, it actually did work. I did something awesome. Thank you.
wondering what was the best part of working on this soundtrack for you?
The best part of it was actually kind of challenging myself in order for me to kind of create something fresh. I'm extremely proud of the soundtrack, and I think it's a very unique soundtrack too that I kind of have heard and I haven't heard before. It's one of those things that I got to be able to do something that kind of felt home to me. There is a lot of references to Blade Runner and kind of those very vintage sounds, and that's what I grew up with. And I was so happy to be able to kind of pull in my old vintage synthesizers and be able to just technically put my hands on the keyboard and be able to kind of massage every single note. I was on the project for about a year and a half, and I would have been exhausted if I didn't enjoy it. It was fun. It was really, really fun to be able to do. And the best part of it was just being able to experiment with whomever I wanted to. And then the entire creative team allowing me to do that. That's the best part. And I can't thank them enough for it.
That is just so fantastic. And when I talked earlier with Philip Shepherd this spring, the soundtrack hadn't been released, but it's out now. And what I love about your soundtrack is that there's like a 9-minute Connor suite, which is very cool. It's like Connor in a nutshell. Was that just drawn from the other cues that you wrote? But what was your intent with having that suite?
Well, actually, that was a condensed version of what I first wrote for the project. So what I like doing is on each one of my projects is after I speak with the creators and after I understand what the project is about, I like going away for about a week or so and write big chunks of music, not against picture. I have an overactive imagination anyways, so I like being able to just sit there and just write musical ideas down and just get them down. So at first, that 8-minute was 32 minutes, I believe it was. And I didn't want to bore people with it, so I just condensed it down to 8 minutes. But that piece was the actual first piece that I ever wrote, and everything else comes from that origin. And so it's just basically, if you will, it's my journal for Connor.
Wow, that is very cool. Wow, Nima, it has been so much fun talking with you about this. And the soundtrack just absolutely blew me away. And it's been really fun to find out just how you created it. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.